Chapter 9, Thursday, June 6, 1776. Hundreds in this New York colony are active against us, and such is the weakness of the government, if it can deserve the name, that the Tories openly profess their sentiments in favor of the enemy and live unpunished. Letter of William Tudor, Washington's chief legal officer, to John Adams. I was stuck on the back steps with a pile of dull knives and a whetstone. It was a dreary job. First, spit on the stone. Next, hold the knife at the proper angle and circle it against the stone. 10 to the left, 10 to the right, until the blade was sharp enough to slice through a joint of beef like it was warm butter. As I sharpened, I imagined using the knife to cut through the ropes that tied us to New York. I'd slice through the ocean, and Ruth and me would walk on the sand all the way home. 10 circles to the left. Ruth was above stairs, standing by whilst Madam prepared herself for company. The master was locked in his library. Becky was somewhere in the crowd watching General Washington parade down Broadway with 5 regiments of soldiers. The sounds of beaten drums and whistling fifes and the cries of huzzah, huzzah, blew toward me over the rooftops. I pushed everything out of my mind, save my task. 10 circles to the right. Becky came back from the parade an hour later, overflowing with stories. She nattered on about the spectacle whilst assembling the tea things for Madam and Lady Seymour, who had come again to call. I pretended to listen. Truth be told, I didn't notice when she left carrying the tray. 10 circles to the left. 10 circles to the righty. All make the blade sharp and mighty. 10 circles to the left. 10 to the right. Becky called for me twice before I heard her proper. Her voice was high and tight. I said to hurry. You want to get me put out on the street? Madam wants you in the parlor. The knife nearly slipped from my hands. Is it Ruth? No, the Lady Seymour wants to see you, and the master just arrived with gentlemen friends all calling for food and drink. Hurry. I washed up in the cold water bucket, quickly pinned on a clean apron, checked my kerchief was on proper, and followed Becky to the parlor. She rapped lightly on the door and pushed it open. The new girl, ma'am, she said, setting a plate of fresh-baked strawberry tarts on the table. Show her in, Madam said. Becky waved at me to enter. Madam and an older woman sat at the table, but my eyes were drawn behind them to my sister. Dressed up as Madam's pretty pet in a bleached linen shift, a navy blue brocade short gown, and a full skirt patterned with lilacs. When she saw me, she clenched her hands together and bit her lower lip. Her eyes were red and swollen with crying. My belly went funny and my mind raced. Why had she been crying? Was she sick? Scared? Did Madam hurt her? Becky poked me gently in the back. This was not the time for questions. I quickly dropped into a curtsy, bowing my head. When I stood up, the older woman, the lady aunt with all the money, gave me a shadow of a smile. She was smaller than Madam and wore a silk gown the color of a mourning dove and gray lace gloves. Her hair was curled high and powdered snow white. A necklace set with black stone shone from her neck. There were deep lines at the corners of her eyes and around her mouth, but I couldn't tell if they were from laughing or from crying. She turned in her chair and looked at Ruth, then back at me. And these two girls are the sisters? She asked. Madam reached for a tart. That's what the man said. The older woman sipped her tea. What is your name, girl? She asked me. Isabel, ma'am, I said. Isabel Finch. Ridiculous name, Madam said. She opened her fan and waved it in front of her face. You are called Sal Lockton now. It's more suitable. I forced myself to breathe in slow and regular instead of telling her that my name was not her affair. Yes, ma'am. She glanced at my feet. And you must wear your shoes. This is a house, not a barn. Ruth stepped out of her corner. Isabel? Madam snapped the fan shut and rapped it against the edge of the table, startling us all. "What did I tell you about silence?" she said roughly. Ruth raised one shaking finger to her mouth and said, "Shh." "Precisely." Madam set the fan in her lap and reached for a piece of sugar with silver tongs. When she plopped it in the cup, the tea overflowed into the saucer. Ruth stood there like a carved statue, her finger still held to her lips. I took another breath, slower than the first, and tried not to think on the newly sharpened knives on the kitchen steps. Lady Seymour curled her fingers around the teacup, her gaze marking first Madam, then Ruth, then me. She said nothing. "Would you like Sal to serve you and Lady Seymour while I wait on the gentleman?" Becky asked. "Absolutely not. Show her the library and make sure the men are fed, and bring fresh tea. This has already gone cold." We curtsied and left the parlor. Ruth's sad eyes followed me to the door. 10 circles to the left, 10 circles to the righty, all make the blade sharp and mighty. Back in the kitchen, Becky took a large silver tray off a high shelf in the pantry. "Hold this." She loaded the tray with plates of cold sliced tongue, cheddar cheese, brown bread, and a bowl of pickles. I could not stop thinking about the way Ruth had jumped when Madam shouted, nor the tears in her eyes. Becky took down a second tray and set upon it 4 goblets, 2 bottles of claret wine, and a crock of mustard. She swung the kettle back over the fire to heat up more water, picked up the tray with the wine, and said, "Hop to." I followed her to the front of the house. "But what about my shoes?" "The master won't notice long as he gets his grub." Becky balanced the edge of the tray on her hip and knocked on the door on the right side of the front hall. When a deep voice answered, she opened it. Lockton looked up as we entered. "Oh, good, sustenance," he said, pushing aside a stack of newspapers to clear off the desk. The room was the same size and shape as the parlor, but 2 of the walls had bookcases built into them. A large painting of horses jumping over a high hedge hung on the 3rd wall. A thin layer of dust lay over everything. The front windows were open, bringing in fresh air and noise from the street. Carts rolling over the cobblestones and church bells in the distance mingled with the voices of the 4 men who sat around the enormous desk. 1 man looked poorer than the others. The cuffs of his coat were frayed and his hands were stained with ink. Next to him sat a man with suspicious gray eyes and a liver-colored coat with a double row of gold buttons fastened over a large pudding belly. The 3rd man wore something on his head that looked more like a dead possum than a wig, but his coat was crisp and new, and the buckles on his shoes gleamed. The 4th was Master Lockton, looking like a cat who had just swallowed the last bite of a juicy mouse.